Hello, my name's Mike Talty. I work for Microsoft in the UK. And this is one of a number of short videos around a new framework that's coming as part of Silverlight 4 and also as part of .NET 4, the full .NET framework, that's called the Managed Extensibility Framework, or MEF for short. So it's coming in both Silverlight and .NET 4. I'm going to look at it here in the realms of Silverlight applications. And in a nutshell, what this framework is about is enabling you to sort of compose a Silverlight application out of a number of very loosely coupled pieces that can use different mechanisms for discovering each other at runtime in order to come together and form an application. If that sounds a little bit abstract, then perhaps to make it more concrete, think of plug-in architectures. Think of something like Visual Studio, which has the capability to plug in lots of different designers and build engines and those kinds of things. Or think of something like Outlook, where you can write add-ins yourself using .NET for Outlook and plug them into the core application. And MEF enables those kinds of scenarios if you want to think of it in a more concrete way. Now, just to provide a few pointers before we get started, if you want to follow along and you want to know how to get started with Silverlight 4 and MEF, then the first thing you need to do is download Visual Studio 2010. The Beta 2 is the build I'm using here. You can get that from msdnmicrosoft.com/vstudio. That's all you need. You don't need the other bits in order to find the download for Beta 2. That will get you Visual Studio 2010. You would then also want the pieces for Silverlight 4 development in Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2. Best place to go to get those is to pop over to silverlight.net, pop over to Get Started over here, and then down on the right-hand side, you will find a link to go and get everything for the Silverlight 4 Beta. And MEF is part of that Silverlight 4 Beta. So follow the instructions there. You'll get the tools in the SDK in order to install the Silverlight 4 development environment bits into Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2. It's worth saying as well that MEF, there's also a version of it on CodePlex for .NET 3.5 and Silverlight 3. So if you pop over to mef.codeplex.com, you can find the previews of MEF on there to play with against .NET 3.5. That's the existing .NET framework, and Silverlight 3, that's the existing released version of Silverlight. Finally, if you're trying to find more of these videos, if you pop over to Channel 9, this is where I'll put the videos. If you go to channel9.msdn.com/niners/mtalty, that's me, and you'll find these videos here as and when they're published. And if you're trying to find me in any way, you can pop over to my website, which is just at mtalty.com, and then you'll find my blog. And finally, if you want to get hold of me via email, you can just mail me at mike.talty@microsoft.com. Okay, so with all that introductory stuff said, let's get started and take a bit of a look at Managed Extensibility Framework. Welcome to video number 6. As you might expect by now, this follows on from video number 5. So if you haven't seen 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's worth checking those out before you watch this video. What we're going to look at here is really to carry on from 5 with a sort of a bit of a scenario which we'll make up. And hopefully that will allow us to look a little bit more at the container. There's so many different ways you can look at the container, so we could spend a long time on that. And maybe get into this idea of something called export providers. We may see that as well as we go along. So let's drop this down and go and have a look at where we are in our code. Okay, so the solution structure is as it was in the previous video. We have our main Silverlight application. It has references out to the assemblies for MEF and also for the package and package catalog that we talked about in video 5 that come from the Silverlight toolkit. It also has reference out to the interface library here. The interfaces library is where we define what it means to be a text engine and what it means to be a word processor in terms of interfaces. And then we have 4 other projects. A library where we have a concrete implementation of our text engine, a library where we have a concrete implementation of our word processor, and then we have 2 other projects whose sole purpose in life is to reference, in this case, the text engine library and turn it into a zap, and in this case, the word processor library and turn it into a zap, such that when we build, we end up with 3 zaps on our website, the main application, text engine, and the word processor. Just taking a look at our various imports for a moment. Let's just go and look at our UI first. Let's just take a look at that. So we've got our main page at the moment is just a grid, and there's a text block on there whose text is data bound to a property called wordprocessortextengine.name, and we use a string format to put that on the screen, and we have a fallback value of not set. Looking at the code behind for this, if we take a look at that, in the code behind we're using meth. So in our constructor we call part initializer satisfy imports. We implement iNotify property change so that any changes to our word processor property will be picked up. We set our data context so that the UI can bind to this word processor property. And this word processor property is imported by MEF. We allow there to be no word processor there, and we allow for recomposition. And that's pretty much it for that main page class. If we take a look at the word processor class, the way I've got that right now, the word processor implements iWordProcessor and exports itself that way. It also implements property changed. It imports a text engine via interface. It allows that to be missing. It allows it to be recomposed. And as we said, it also fires property changed. And I think there's nothing special about the text engine, so it's just a class that exports itself as iTextEngine. So the way this stands at the moment, I have taken out any code that did anything special around containers. So if we take a look at our application class for a minute, in the previous video we did add some code to application startup. That isn't there right now. And so what that means is as we build and press F5, what we've got is our main application loading. We ask MEF to try and compose a text engine and a word processor, and we aren't loading those additional zaps. So that's a problem because we have no text engine, we have no word processor. So a pretty common scenario would be one where the application shipped with some kind of default implementation of plugins, but offered the opportunity to load some other kind of implementations if they were around. So let's go and try and implement something a bit like that here. Let's go back to our solution. And let's go to our text engine. And let's change the type of this. Let's not have it called text engine anymore. Let's have it called plugin text engine, something like that, plugin text engine. And we'll call this, we'll give it a name that reflects that, you know, so we'll just say plugin engine, something like that. I don't think anything else depends on that concrete type, so we should be fine. So this is the plugin text engine, but let's imagine that my application ships with a default text engine, just in case you haven't got one. So for now, we won't make it ship with a default word processor, we'll just make it ship with a default text engine. So let's go to the application here and let's add a new class. And it'll be default text engine, the one that's built into the app. And let's make that implement iTextEngine. And let's do that. And let's actually throw in an implementation of that if we can. And the name, of course, will be, let's say, default engine. So that's great. And process text doesn't do anything because we've yet to call this method ever in any of these videos, so that doesn't really matter. But we do want this thing to be exported, let's get the namespace for that, as a type of iTextEngine. So imagine the scenario is that if somebody provides a better text engine, we'll use it. But in the absence of a better text engine, we'll use this one. That's really the idea. And so let's go and see if we can set up our container in order to make that work. So let's close all this down. And let's go over to our app.xaml. So this is our app.xaml.c# where we can do some work to customize the container. And let's just go back over here and have a look at this. So here's application startup. And in fact, what I might do is just add another partial class here. So we can get away from this code, let's go and write at startup time here. Let's write initialize container, something like that. So we've got that, and let's create a second source file. So just go ahead and add another class. We'll call this appcode.c#, something like that. That should be okay. And we'll just replace that. Make sure we can still build. And then, of course, we need to write our initialize container function over there. So we'll just write void initialize container, and all should be good. Great. So it just gives me a way of not getting all bogged down in that other code that's in that file. OK, so what I want to do is I want to combine a type that's already built in with some types that are downloaded using the package catalog again. So I guess what I need to do is something like, let's make a type catalog. So here's my type catalog. Just fix the namespace. Make a new one of those, and I'm going to add to that my default type. So that is default text engine. So that's in there. And then what I'll do is I'll go and try and download some other assemblies. So let's say package catalog. Create a new one of those. Nothing in there just yet. And then we'll try and download those other assemblies kind of in a bit of a hacky inline way here. So let's just say package.downloadPackage. We want a new URI. One is called textEnginePackage.zap, and that will be a relative URI. And the other one is called WordProcessorPackage.zap. So we're just going to explicitly try and download these things right here and now. And we need to write a little callback for those. So what we want to do is write a function. If we just have a look at the callback, we'll just say, I suppose we need to say action of, I think this thing has an async completed event args. Let's just get the namespace for that. And a package. Let's say the callback equals args, comma, package, produce. And all we really want to say is if this wasn't cancelled and it did work, then we'll add the package to the catalog. So we'll just say package catalog dot add package with that package. So just kind of written that as a little callback there, and then we can go and provide that here. And we can provide it hopefully here as well. Okay, so we're coming along and we're saying, okay, we always want this default text engine because that's the default text engine, so it's got to be there. And then we're going to make a package catalog as well. We're going to try and download these zaps into that catalog. And so that's all fine. And I guess what I could do is just move that into a separate function. Let's just extract a method from that. Let's say download zaps, something like that. Okay, so we just move that into another function down there to cut the code down a bit. So we download our zaps asynchronously. And then, of course, we need a composition container. Let's call that container. Let's create a new one. And then we need to say composition host.initialize container with container. And we need to make sure that we have both our type catalog and our package catalog in the composition container. And we've seen before that a way of combining those things is to make an aggregate catalog. So let's say aggregate catalog equals new one of those. And we'll put in there first the package catalog. And then we'll put in there the type catalog. Okay, great. We feed that aggregate catalog into our container here. Then, you know, it kind of looks good because we've got our default text engine in a type catalog. Then we make a package catalog. We download those zaps asynchronously if we can. And if we can, they'll get added to, that catalog will get added to, and it's already in the aggregate catalog that we've given to the container that we've initialized as the default. Phew. Okay. So let's try and take a look at this. Let's close a few windows. And I'm not quite sure how to do this, because what I want to do in the first instance is I want to delete this text engine package we've got here. So let's delete that. Now I need to be careful, because if I build, it will get recreated. But if I just view this test page in a browser without debugging, then you can see that in this context, when the text engine plugin is not present and so can't be loaded, we have used the default engine, which seems okay. Let's build. So now the text engine package is there and ready for loading. Let's view this in a browser again. And interestingly, we end up with a not set value. So that's quite not really what we were expecting. What we were expecting was to use the plugin engine. So it's kind of strange. So let's go back to our code. And what's going on here is that we've presented Meph with a bit of a quandary. And we've done this before in these videos. The way that the aggregate catalog works is that if you ask it for an export, it will come back with all of the exports it can find. Now the problem is, when the package catalog gets populated and the type catalog is already populated, we end up with two text engines of exactly the same look and feel. They're both exported by iTextEngine, and we end up with two of them. And so the framework can't decide which one you actually want on the word processor. And so using an aggregate catalog like this won't work for us. But there's another way we can do this, and it kind of goes beyond catalogs in some ways. Catalogs have been useful for us up until now. But when we're constructing a composition container like this one, and you look at the overloads on here, one of the things that you could pass, which is what we've been passing all along, is a catalog followed by any number of export providers. Or there is this other overload that simply takes any number of export providers. And we'll come back to export providers in a moment. It so turns out that a composition container is an export provider. And so what we could do is make another container. So instead of using this one here, what we could do here is make a, let's say, some kind of parent container. So let's say composition container parent equals new one of those, and let's add into that the type catalog. That's kind of my defaults catalog, I suppose. And perhaps if we rename things that way, let's just change this thing to be called defaults catalog, and let's rename this thing to be called defaults container. So that's my container that contains my default types, which for us is just a single text engine. Then what we've got is this sort of dynamic catalog. So let's rename that for a minute. Oh, actually, let's leave that as package catalog. That's fair. And the package catalog we can build into another container down here, which we'll call maybe the package container. And that's based around the package catalog. But what we want to do is, if types are not found in that package catalog, we want to defer to the defaults container. And then we use the package container here. So really what we're saying there is that we can construct a composition container with a catalog followed by one or more of these export providers, and one export provider is a composition container. So we've got this idea of that linking together that way. So let's go and build, and let's see if we can view this in a browser over here. Let's delete our text engine package again. Let's view this page in a browser, and we're expecting to see the default engine because the plugin is not there. That makes perfect sense. Let's go rebuild, getting our zap back with the text engine plugin, and let's go and view that in the browser again. And we're expecting to see the plugin engine because the plugin engine is there. So notice that this is a different scenario from just working with the aggregate catalog, which surfaces all the things that match. What happens when we construct the composition container this way is that we search this catalog, if you like, first. If we find a match, we give up. If we don't find a match, we go on to the next guy in the list. And we can continue this with more and more containers as we go along. So this is another one of those areas where Meph is doing a bunch of implicit stuff for us, that if you need the control, it might be worth knowing about what's happening just sort of behind the scenes here. We're currently creating a composition container by passing it a catalog and another composition container. That's one way of doing what we wanted to do, but let's just unpick this a little bit. We're doing that because when we look at this overload here, there is an overload that takes a catalog and any number of export providers. And I said a minute ago that a composition container just happens to be an export provider. In fact, it doesn't just happen to be, it's a design point. And so we can see them verify that. If we jump to the definition in the framework of a composition container, you can see that it is an export provider. So what does it mean to be an export provider? Let's take a look at that. An export provider, as the name suggests, is a thing that provides exports into MEF. It's an extensibility point, and that's really why this class here is abstract, so that you can build your own, and there's a few in the framework as well. Fundamentally, there's one key method in here. Don't get bogged down by all these different get exported X, Y, and Z. The one key method in here, I think, is this guy here, get exports core. So basically, given some definition of an import, give me a bunch of exports that might match that as a list or enumeration of exports. So it really is a class that knows how to get exports for MEF. It also supports the idea that those exports can change over time, and obviously that's essential if you want to support ideas like recomposition, which we know MEF does support. So we've got this idea of an export provider. Let's go back to our code. And so composition container is an export provider. That lets us pass this here. But it turns out that even when you pass a catalog, what MEF does is turn that into an export provider straight away. So the only thing that the composition container relies on in this area is export providers. And we can take this code and kind of write it out longhand to show that. And so when we're passing this package catalog here, MEF is actually turning that into a thing called a catalog export provider. It just wraps it up in an export provider. We could do that. We could say catalog export provider, let's say, I don't know, package provider. We could create that up, oh dear, and wrap it around the package catalog. And then what we're doing clearly here is, if we pass package provider, we're now using the overload of the constructor, which just takes a list of export providers. And they're kind of doing explicitly what MEF was doing for us implicitly anyway. The other thing to say is, if we realize that we can do this, then we could also use the type catalog here as well. We don't need this container anymore, so let's get rid of this container. And let's wrap around that type catalog another catalog export provider. Let's call that the defaults provider, and we'll wrap it around that defaults catalog that we called it. And then we can pass that guy down here, defaults provider. So now what we're doing is passing two explicit export providers. These things are export providers, and we're passing them straight away. One of the things we need to do with both of those, actually, as it happens, is you have to set a property on them. So package provider dot source provider to point back to kind of the next guy in the chain, which for us is going to be our package container. And we'll say the same thing on the defaults provider, just to set that up. And actually, if you pass multiple export providers here, like we are doing, what the container does internally is it creates an instance of another export provider. If you've not had too many export providers already, it creates another export provider, which is a thing called an aggregate export provider. So let's take that and let's say aggregate provider, new one of those things, and we'll pass into that our package provider and our defaults provider. And then what we can pass down here now is our aggregate provider. So the composition container only knows about export providers. When you pass multiple, it bundles them into an aggregate export provider. The way that this thing works is that if you ask it for a list of exports, it will return the union of all the exports in here and all the exports in there. If you ask it for a single export, it will search this provider first, and if it finds that export, it'll stop. And if it doesn't find that export, it'll wander into this provider, which exactly is exactly how we've made our behavior work in this video. So if we rebuild, assuming I set that up okay, let's just go and delete our text engine package again. When we view the HTML, we should see a default engine. That's good. When we rebuild, putting that text engine package back, and we view the HTML, we should see the plugin engine, and we do, and that's good. So don't get me wrong, you know, there's no reason for you to write all this code here, because we had a simpler version of it up front. But all I'm trying to show you is that behind the scenes, what the container is working with is these things called export providers, and they have a whole bunch of functionality. And of course you can go and implement your own. So your entry point into this world is not to have to build catalogs and so on. You can just go ahead and build yourself an export provider and then plug it in alongside the ones that are already here.